Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Brand Trust Podcast. My name is Adam Vass, and I'm a tabletop game designer in Southern California.
And my name's Will Yopes. I'm a tabletop game designer in York, Toronto. In York, it's like Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Notes of Toronto.
It's got a Toronto base with a little York through line. Are you a super taster? You strike me as someone who might be.
No, there was definitely a while where I was doing like palate refinement for coffee.
Whoa. What does that involve?
Just like doing tastings and like
resistance training,
like pairings and stuff too. Like you would eat like a little tiny bite of jam and be like, now look for this.
Now this jam tongue, this is jam
in your next coffee sip.
Pull-ups using the Amazon pull-up bar with your tongue. My old employer was a wine guy, and he said the way you do like that kind of thing is you just get a basic wine and then just put something in it, so you know, like you put like an orange peel in it or like a rock, and then you know that like, oh, this wine has a rock taste because I have rock wine at home and I've drank it before.
I have drank the rock wine.
Rock wine, that's that sounds like something Aerosmith would sell at a concert.
Having recently been to an Aerosmith concert, it was like 1 year ago now.
Yeah. Recently. Wasn't there a weird opener? Wasn't it like...
There was no opener because it was a residency in Las Vegas.
Can I guess how long the sets were?
I don't remember. Yeah. I had an edible before because I knew I was not going to enjoy it. And then there's also all this weird, like inflatable dolls that came down from the ceiling at one point tripping me out. There was a walkway that went from the stage to like behind me and above, and that was during the end. They were scaling that while performing, and that was a wild ride.
You're worried that Steve Perry would clock you and be like, are you high at my concert? At my musical rock concert?
Excuse me, police.
Police, right here.
It was, what's the opposite of formative?
Oh, degenerative. It was degenerative experience. Speaking of degenerative experience, welcome back to another episode of the Brain Trust Podcast. Last episode, we talked about hexes, and we got to a funnel with hexes, and so we wanted to loop around this episode and talk about what a reverse funnel would look like. Maybe we should like define what a funnel is.
Yeah.
So I got these new ice cubes that make perfect balls of ice. And so the ice cube tray comes in two pieces of like silicon, and they both have a half ball shape in them. It's not one big ball. It's six medium sized balls. And you put them on each other, and you have to use a little funnel to get the water in there. And that's what a funnel is.
We're really on some, like high class culinary journey shit this episode. I had ice sphere molds. I don't think they
ice
made it
sphere molds
through moving with me, but I had them for a while.
I also got like rock ones. Rock ones, fucking rock wine, just big blocks,
like whiskey stones.
Whiskey stones, thank you. And you just make these giant things like you'd get an expensive margarita somewhere. Oh man, I want to do that. Shit, I wish there was no disease. No, they don't fit into any glass, and so I just have to make like survival rations. Like I have to make them much smaller and still the same width.
Wait, now I'm very curious because that's not what a whiskey stone is.
Oh, no, it's not like a rock that I freeze and it's like my friend that is with me every time I'm drinking whiskey. It's like a big cube of ice.
Oh.
Like the size of a big cube. Cubes. Shit. Sometimes I feel like I'm still counting out cubes for Guide. Hey, if you're listening and you bought Guide, take a picture of those cubes and let's see the cube layout that everybody got, because everybody got slightly different colors.
Yeah, there's like 10 permutations of cube.
So I want to know what your cube type is. So go on the Brain Trust Discord and post it. Anyway, a funnel is a type of game experience, a game format for like traditional dungeon crawly fantasy games, where you have a character and a really hard, basically like level that you go through. That's very lethal. It's rough. You know, say you're like a townsperson and someone discovers a big hole in the ground. And it smells like gold or something. And so a mayor in the town says like, oh yeah, this is a boom town now. So we have to get down there before people coming from out of town and get it. Let's go. And so you go down and deal with whatever's in there. Usually a very like harrowing experience where you'll probably die. And you have multiple characters that you just send down one after another as a group. You're all doing this, and the winner is the one who has survived the funnel. You then play your fantasy adventure with, because they proved themselves to get from level 0 to level 1.
Right. These are not the like superpowered fantasy heroes. These are the everyday people. And then through culling, you find the ones that are superpowered, presumably. Yeah, exactly. Or like you assign the power based on their ability to survive.
They've had the narrative time to win. Like they've won, so they are superpowered for you, the player.
There's also this is generally tied to like old school fantasy games. Mm-hmm. And because you're not attached to your characters, it's almost exclusively player skill based. So really, I find in a funnel the characters are not distinct.
Like, yeah, they usually all have the same last name or something.
And the idea, too, is, like, you don't want to get attached because the likelihood is high that they'll die. So because of that, they're not really, like, important. They're not even, like, real people.
You ever feel like you're surrounded by NPCs?
Oh, my gosh.
Yesterday on Twitter sure felt like that.
Before we go on to the reversing of the funnel...
Should we just talk about funnel straight up?
A little bit, but I mean, what I was going to say is I think there's... So that's the standard funnel. That is almost exclusively level 0 violent culling in fantasy adventure gaming, right? Like, that's the standard funnel experience. But I think there are funnels... So what I was going to say is I think Guide to Casting Phantoms is a little bit of a character funnel.
Yeah.
As a story game, insofar as you start with a suite of characters, a pool, and through play you prioritize them, and prioritizing them has mechanical changing in the system. One day y'all are going to play it, I swear.
It's so good.
We finished packing it 1 year ago, and also quarantine started 1 year ago, so it just hasn't been engaged with. And it will be, and it is fantastic. Because a lot of the time, I think we reference rules and systems in it because we're among the 20 people who've played it.
We just really jam-packed the best shit in there.
It's good. So I think I think considering that as a narrative funnel is interesting, too. Because, like, what other... Yeah. Are there other games off the top of your head that you would think maybe not are... Are maybe not traditionally revered as funnel, but have like funnel built into it?
Yeah, it's interesting because Guide is a troop style game, so there are way more characters than there are players. So it just starts from that place. I'm trying to think of other troop style games. Like Ars Magica does not do this. That's like the big troop style game. When gamers talk about it, they're talking about that. Yeah. What?
I don't know, because I'm looking at my shelf and I'm failing to like come up with another one, but such a thing must exist. Seems like something we'd be into too, like we'd have.
Yeah.
Don't mind me just rolling my desk chair over bubble wrap.
That's cool. Hey, is it all good over there?
I'm back in the closet this week.
That's good. That's better than like in the... In an Instagram influencer room or something where everything's covered with bubble wrap. You know, like one of those rooms that they had before quarantine?
I
do,
yeah. No, I was just looking at my shelf.
You just go and take pictures of?
Yeah, no, I live in LA now, so.
It's all that.
I get it.
Damn, if Gen Con had like that, where I could go and take pictures with like fucking.
I would argue it does have that. Like the human-sized King of Tokyo game or whatever, where you can like stand next to the giant legally distinct Godzilla.
Right, yes, exactly. Like, or like usually there's a new like Fantasy Flight has a giant like big titty mini that they make like 10 feet tall, and then you just stand near it and you're like, okay. Yeah, I'm discovering something about this crowd.
There are Instagrammable experiences within Gen Con.
More specifically, like, you know, like you go to a room and it's like what every board game cafe owner's idea of their own board game cafe is.
Sure. yeah, like there are like the Empires of the North or whatever are like waging battle on your table while you're drinking a room temperature latte.
Yeah, or you like you go to the Cyberpunk augmented zone and someone puts some Microsoft in your head or something.
I'm picturing it's the guy from TikTok who does the POV dystopia. Yes. And he has just GoPros yes. taped to each hand.
Hey everybody, there is a new TikTok account that you have to go see. I can't remember the name right now, but the song
I'm pulling
is
it up. Oh wait,
when the lion's hungry he eats, and it's a guy. He's okay, Adam, here's the thing, he is in Toronto. I can tell like the way that all the houses look and the streets, and he kind of looks Canadian that way.
Yeah, now that you said it, I can see it.
He's wearing a jet black Matrix style leather trench coat, Matrix style glasses, and GoPros on both wrists and forehead, and he will just upload a video that's like confirming gravity is the comment. And it'll be him on a children's swing set as there's loud, like, techno going. And I mean techno when I say it. I'm kind of a music fan, so I know what techno actually means. It will just be the sickening three shots, like, all going at the same time. Like, you're in VR, but you have three eyes, and it's just horrible and so funny.
I found it. I don't know how to... It's not a username that's easy to say, so it's GRAEMEBARRETT 69.
69. Nice.
So it'll say virtual reality TikTok, increasing friction to feline, and then it's just him petting a cat with a GoPro on his hand. It's good God. Shit.
Oh, it's so good. He'll just be like on the street in some like side street in Toronto, just like pounding Monster in a clear cup. Like
one of my new favorite things too is that in the preload, while the Morpheus clip is playing, he'll have reversed footage of popping a balloon.
Yeah,
so it looks like he's manifesting this green balloon in his hands before the POV starts.
Yeah, it's really perfect. I would love to play in like a dipshit cyberpunk game like that, where you're just like, I'm like, what if cyber metal was actually very dumb, like
very funny?
Yeah,
I've definitely come around. It's gotten a little bit dumber, I'll admit.
Cyber metal,
because of the alt history, I'm basically doing like an 80s retro future instead. Cool. Of it still has alt history consideration, but I'm focusing a little bit more on it being like a time capsule of like the transition between bands like Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath into bands like Metallica and Anthrax.
Yeah, so cool. Wow, we said Anthrax at the same time. That's so special.
we're on the wavelength.
Remember when Public Enemy and Anthrax did a song together?
Remember when people would flood the Anthrax Facebook group and be like, how could you name your band this? Because 20 years after their band started, when people were getting Anthrax in the mail, a bunch of moms were like, this is fucked up. Also, the band Isis has that, and they haven't even been a band for quite a long time. But maybe 6 to 8 years ago, I remember there being like a campaign for like, I can't believe there's a band called ISIS. And it's like, well, there was. They're already not a band. So you kind of missed your outrage window here.
Hey, Jello Biafra, where do you get off making a band called The Dead Kennedys?
Where do you get off calling yourself Jello? Don't you know Bill Cosby's a bad person? You called yourself Jello. Let's get back on track.
Wait, now I'm trying to think of other bands what that would happen to.
Hey, moments ago when we were like, we're going to do a good at, we're going
to
try.
Like literally before recording, I was like, I think we're going to get a lot of people listening to this one, so we should try and do it a little more better.
And we started.
Usual.
Oh, do you know what a funnel is? Well, here's a game. Have you seen this TikTok?
That he has 1,200 followers. And
I'm one of them now.
I've sent it to everyone I know. Maybe we should take a break and then come back.
Yeah.
When the lion's hungry, he breaks. Did like an AMA video kind of thing where he like broke character and he's like, I don't know what you want. Do you want a new song? Do you want the old song?
No, we only want this forever.
Actually, the new song's really good.
I didn't realize it changed.
There is one where it's like, we know that humanity is limited, but what if we made the unlimited human?
Oh, and then no.
It's like much a more melodic kind of breakbeats thing. It's just really good. It's just super duper good. Like,
I would love an Outlier ep 2 when the Mortal Kombat movie comes out to use the Mortal Kombat techno song, because that song's awesome.
Yeah, that would rock.
Get a little cross promotion in there, you know. Help out the little guy.
Hey, why aren't we cross promoting any Mortal Kombat shit?
Still waiting for the check to clear.
Still waiting for the check to clear from, what's that developer? They're in Chicago. They abuse their workers and shit. Fuck them. Mm. Get over here. I like Johnny Cage.
I don't know enough about Mortal Kombat to have any opinions except for the new movie looks like propaganda.
Oh, no.
But at the same time, you see people's spines getting taken out. Like,
I mean, that's nice. I watched the Mortal Kombat movie at Coolidge Corner a couple of years ago, and it was a midnight movie. And do you remember the upstairs weirdly long, like wide theater in Coolidge Corner?
I watched Kiki's Delivery Service in that.
Wow.
One.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, they use the big theater to show like The Room and have a bunch of
DJs. I saw Die Hard on Christmas Day in the big theater.
That rocks.
Yeah.
I saw Cats a couple times. Aww. but I was seeing the Mortal Kombat movie and I fell asleep so hard my head hit this marble railing behind me. And there is still a bump. I just like injured myself sleeping in a movie.
And we're back.
We're talking about a reverse funnel.
Yeah, so we have the funnel. We've established a funnel.
Imagine a funnel in your mind.
There's potential for funnel in narrative ways. I think too, I'll throw this out there of having like, so there was a while last year where Tyler Crumrine was running the Wizards in the Waste by Bats in the Brain Trust Discord.
Yes.
And the way that Tyler organized play, which I think is really novel, and I kind of built into the system of Babes 2, is having a basically like a job board. Like, here's the 10 things that you can do today. And you're only going to be able to pick 3 or 4 in the time that we have allotted for play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is sort of a built-in like narrative funnel that's not character focused in that of like, you have your setting and you have your opportunities, and by culling, by choosing some, you're culling others. And also by choosing some, they kind of innately have a narrative consequence that others might not have. Like sometimes you just do the job's over, but sometimes you do the job and it like changes some status quo. And that in a way is kind of creating a narrative funnel of like, well, now that status quo has changed, it's logical to go to this next like narrative step or do this one job instead. I think that's an interesting consideration in the abstraction of funneling that we're going to get into.
Yeah. I think looking at it from a perspective of like the process of a funnel is like whittling down until you have the character and they live in the power that they lacked throughout the whole funnel experience. And so where my head's at is that at the beginning of the reverse funnel, you have everything you need, and then you get the experience of like basically depowering yourself through choice or something like that. Like in some way, whether it's like you're losing opportunities until you have one clear path, like you're clearing them, or physically like you're in the treasure room of the dungeon and then you have to go back to town and decide what you do. Like,
so
those are all different.
Those are two different or different shapes, I think, because the former having everything and then going down to nothing, I think is a funnel, right?
Oh, true.
Because the whole idea of like the, you know, going back to the core starting funnel, having as many infinite characters and ending up with one, I think the reverse funnel is having one option,
whether infinite human,
whether it be a character or a narrative path or whatever, and then widening it.
Yeah.
So
widening it to a horizon point.
Right. To effectively limitless, because, and I made the pseudo joke text to you after we stopped recording last week, that Wizard of Oz is a reverse funnel.
Yeah.
Because you start with Dorothy, and along the way you make these friendships with characters who are in the party, right? Like, they don't just stick around for a minute. They're along for the ride.
Yes. If you look at the Wizard of Oz as a funnel, it is a party of adventurers starting out in Emerald City and getting brutally murdered until there's a witch massacre at the city. where Dorothy is shot out of the realm.
I think there's definitely difficulty or dissonance in having the reverse funneling be character count.
Yes.
Because the juggling, like imagining Wizard of Oz where you, the one player, is control of the Tin Man and the Lion and Dorothy, and I think there's another one, and the dog. I guess.
You're forgetting what would be something funny to say? I can only think of shit from Mandy right now. I'm thinking of like a really hardcore thing. Davis.
That doesn't ring anything to me. But
Davis?
Bringing Mandy in makes me think too of a reverse funnel in so far as like the funneling isn't your character. Your character is funneling. So you have, and this also makes me think of the Nemesis system in that one Lord of the Rings game.
Shadow of Copyright Strike.
Where you're going, like, the hierarchy of villains is a funnel. And at the start, you're taking out all these low levels and there's tons of them, right? And then as you defeat them, you can work your way into this tighter knit, cabal of villains who are more powerful because the amount of power on each like row is shared by less beings.
Yeah.
So similarly in Mandy, like you have all the like unnamed cult members, right? And you're working your way up towards the cult leader for the final showdown. And then along the way too, you have the like acid bikers and shit. Like those are like meta bosses, kind of.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's really cool. Yeah, that's a cool reverse funnel of you have a really wide selection of targets, and that target selection whittles down, but in doing so, so say like you have 10 power points, right? At the start, you have 10 villains that are each one power. And then at the next tier, you have 5 villains that are each 2 power. Like, it always equals the same amount. So at the end, you have 1 villain that has 10 power. The way to think of just this, like, triangular, I guess, I mean, that's a pyramid. Yeah. That is literally a reverse funnel as a triangle.
Yeah.
Work your way up from the base to the top. That's an exciting prospect for, and I think that's already kind of logically built into a lot of adventure campaigns, right? Like, you fight the goblins and skeletons and shit, and you work your way up to whoever's in charge.
Knights Like Agents, the game where you play super spies hunting vampires, you create a conspiracy pyramid, and you travel up it. So doing that kind of gameplay is really great, because it just builds these connections out of things that you might not know how the signal station in Prague is related to a cruise ship in the Bahamas. Like, but because they're both on this conspiracy, you figure out like what nodes they link up to and what they do for the operation. I mean, that's for anybody that's interested in like campaign design and stuff, Knights Like Agents is a really good resource for that.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I dig that. I think too, the reverse pyramid functions really well as the as a narrative or adventure structure.
So like this idea that if you assassinate the king of like evil kingdom or something, and then you then become the king, but then have to work down until you get to the person level. Like, that just is kind of interesting gameplay. That's not something you typically see, because you see the opposite. Like, starting from nothing and then getting all the power, and starting with all the power and then like fully dismantling a government that way. Seems pretty neat.
Yeah, I think there's something to that of, like, this is far from my favorite example and something I'm not super smart about, but Game of Thrones, where it's like, I'm actually the king now.
Yeah.
So the first thing I'm going to do is fire the king's assistant. And by fire, I mean kill. Then I'm going to
fire out of a cannon.
Work my way down the hierarchy of people with whom I interact because I'm king, to cull the people who I don't trust or find disloyal, or were loyal to my predecessor or whatever.
Let's make it like really loosey-goosey. So like, you were on a ship with the pirate king away from Tortuga, and you've killed a pirate king whose name is like Davis, and you are king on that boat, and then have to then translate that power to like the next boat you see, and then eventually like the, you know, the mysterious pirate city of Tortuga.
I think too, you end up like right away, number 2, number 3 in command are like, hey, what the fuck, boss, we were next. Like,
yeah.
You immediately have beef with them because you cut in line. And I think that trickle-down system of antagonism has a lot of potential interest.
Literally the only thing Reagan was right about is the trickle-down antagonism. Also, they're scallywags, so, you know, just handling scallywags is something we should put in more role-playing games. A scallywag management system.
Just have, yeah.
Welcome to the scallywag system. Trademarking it.
Does your book have a section on scallywags or not? Because I'm not interested if you omitted a scallywag chapter.
I was looking at the table of contents, didn't see the scallywag section. So, like, defining what is a scallywag and the kind of immersive live theater of scallywag style game.
Scallywag, is there anything there?
Scallywag, scullywag, Mulderwag.
There's a lot. I mean, scallywag's not pirate exclusive. It just takes a little mispronunciation and you can make it work wherever you want.
Yeah, skillywag. Interesting. Rails. Let's get back on.
Well, the trick is we came up with a topic during what is usually the bullshit. We came back around to some bullshit, but now we're only half an hour in. We gotta really reassess our trajectory. So I think,
yeah, how are we doing so far?
Well, I think we have a good thing. Reverse funnel as campaign structure. Reverse funnel as like villain hierarchy.
Yeah.
And also as narrative thing. Let's throw it in the garbage. Let's start over.
Goodbye.
I think this is a thing that we do when we have fun storming sessions on the show. Like, I think back to the Hex episode. It's like, that's a cool idea. Let's completely abandon it and start something completely new from scratch and see where it goes. And
I have described this process as like game design catch and release. You're like, I could do it. I know I could do it. And I want the fish to live. So,
and I think 2 out of 3 are usually pretty solid. And I like, yeah. I like those chances. So we have one.
How about a very literal understanding of like a reverse funnel where you are the adventurer in the treasure room? And then you're going back through the dungeon. And then you tell the story of the funnel.
There's something there. I don't know that I would call it a reverse funnel, though. I think... So this is also funny because that's the pretense for the fantasy preset in Fiasco. Is like you start at the treasure room.
Oh, cool.
And you go back out.
Damn, they really had to make a fantasy preset for Fiasco. That's wild.
Yeah. I mean, this I played it. Business. It was fun.
Yeah, it sounds fun. It's Fiasco.
It's more fun than any fantasy game I've ever played.
Hey.
So...
Yar. Sorry, get Scally brain. I've been wagged by Scallies.
The issue I foresee with your pitch is your... Not that it's an issue. It's just that I don't think it's reverse funneling because you're just doing the funnel in reverse. Like you have.
I understand.
So saying. What you're saying is like you're exiting the dungeon that you've lost all these corpses in, and as you cross their dead body, you like have the recollection of how they died, or like you're. So this is definitely a reverse funnel. You're telling the story of the funnel in reverse.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense to me now that I like walked through it.
It's got some more like group play, which I think this concept is a little shaky on in general.
Yeah. Oh, it's very like I said, it's not very immersive insofar as like it's just what you, the player, decide.
Yeah.
And then luck, because you don't have skills and abilities and stuff yet, which is fine. It's a different style of play. But
I mean, like reverse funnel, say like the treasure room of this thing had like 4 summoning stones or whatever, like Phoenix downs for each player at the table. And so you go and there's just like tons of fucking bodies everywhere. And you as players like determine like, oh, okay, there's a body here and I'll need another adventuring companion to get past this challenge, this next challenge. Like, do we like try and revive you now with this body, or do we go and find like the mage that I know that's down in there, or the paladin who got embarrassingly killed in a very compromising way?
This might be
hidden related or not dead. Yeah,
but what if you do your funnel play as normal
funnel play,
and you get to whatever the point is where the funnel is not funneling anymore, right? Then you, so presumably the treasure room, that's the end. But it's fantasy, it's pseudo magical. So on your way out, all of the corpses that you created are alive in some form. They're ghouls or skeletons or whatever. So like, oh, yeah, even
like a Dark Souls curse on the dungeon.
If you have like if you're playing the funnel and you have character cards or sheets for each of these characters that you create, when it dies you pass it to a pool or to the game master or some other place, right? So they're preserved, and then you have whatever information about them still recorded and still accessible. So the playing the funnel in reverse, you then have to like double cull these characters, which allows for one, some drama, because like that was my brother and now he's a zombie. A lot of the stuff that Walking Dead kind of touches on too, of like I know for reality's sake that I need to do this to protect myself and the people around me, but I can't bring myself to slay the zombie that it was my mom or whatever. You
this
know?
Zombie looks exactly like my wife. I can't kill my wife.
In a funnel, you have those confrontations often. Right. Or okay. Exiting the funnel.
I got some cool ideas. So like, say you as the players are the dungeon spirits that are just trapped here because of whatever curse happened, because you're horrible grave robbers. You're just cursed to be here forever. And so one of you wins, but then the other three spirits go around and can revive whatever bodies were brought or killed or whatever inside of this dungeon. But because you have this like grave curse, you now have to fortify the dungeon after your funnel to protect against any other people funneling into the dungeon. For as far as the town knows, no one came out alive. So it's a reverse funnel in that, like, structurally, you are characters generating more characters, doing an equally dangerous task, but it's like the literal opposite, where you are protecting a place from tons of
tower defense.
People. Exactly, yeah.
Tower finally, defense the tower is the defense reverse game. Funnel.
So, like, the first time you play, you're doing the funnel and creating the geography of the dungeon you will then protect. And it just can be randomly generated because that's how dungeons go. And once you're in, you just have created, like, interestingly, the more dangerous a dungeon you create on the way in, the easier it is to protect later. So you have to balance this stuff between, like, we want to go a straight shot and have a very clear path to the throne room so we get there. Right there. Clear Path to the Throne Room sounds like a good game name. or you could take this very long meandering path that will whittle down every adventurer that comes in, but there's a chance you might not make it and get to that second phase of play or whatever like that.
Have you read or played The Skeletons by Jason Morningstar?
No, I gotta.
So in it, you play as the skeletons who are tasked with protecting a dungeon, but it's a much more abstract take than what we're describing here, where it's like you sit in darkness for 60 seconds in silence because emulating the time passage that, because like reanimated skeletons aren't just walking around, they wait for an adventurer to come through and then they try to stop them or whatever. And then the game has increasing lengths of time that you do that. So I think at the end it's like, I don't know. I haven't read it in a while. It's minutes though. Like, yeah. sitting in darkness and silence for minutes to emulate these skeletons being there for years. And through the game, you explore the changes of circumstance, over extremely long periods of time, but then also your kind of dwindling sense of self because. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're an eternal reanimated skeleton, you've been there for 1,000 years. Like, what even do you remember about being anything else? It's good. It's interesting. It's one of those that I've read with not necessarily the intent to play, but I think it has a lot of cool consideration, especially just using real time as a measurement of gameplay.
Yeah, that's neat.
But worth mentioning because that role, playing as that role, is already an interesting consideration, right?
Yeah, and it flips the dungeon delve on its head.
Right. It makes me, in a completely different way, makes me think of Boss Monster, the card game, where you're like using cards to build out a dungeon path so the hero doesn't complete it. You ever play that?
No, that's really fucking cool.
It was one of those, like, when I first got into, like, deeper, or not deeper strategy, but, like, less common. I think it's very common. It's very popular once you're in the niche. But once I was like, what's this? A card game? It was, like, one of my earlier really fun experiences with niche gaming, tabletop stuff. But the idea being, like, you're the boss, you're the Bowser, whatever, and you're, like, crafting the dungeon out of cards, which is a single line, usually, like, a horizontal line. And then the competitive nature is, like, you send heroes to other people's dungeons, and if the hero can get through and survive, then it causes that person detriment, that player.
Yeah.
Which is fun. I mean, it's fun. It's a fun game. Whatever.
That's cool.
There's definitely stuff. It's funny because I would say Boss Monster is not art. It's just like a fun strategy game with retro pixel art.
Yeah. And then, it's got like that SNES vibe to it, right? Yeah.
And then the Skeletons is a very artsy game. But what we're talking about is this hybrid that lives in between the two of like dungeon design and also being these like trapped souls within it.
Yeah.
There's like fun potential there. Because
you could even just get away from the fantasy and just say it's like a derelict space station and that you, as the AI, is trapped in it, have to rewrite it and shit.
Yeah, cool. I like that. I was going to say on the next pitch, let's do not a fantasy one. But that's already something like a derelict space station that will naturally have like people dock, like space travelers will dock there. And then...
Oh, yeah. It's got like a, you can't turn off the emergency beacon, so people are just gonna flood in, and like you are one person that flooded in, and your reward was just your brain was uploaded to the station.
Yeah, that's cool. Because then too, like, you have space pirates, you have space refugees, you have just full on
space scallywags.
You have full on just like alien creatures. Like,
I actually really love this, and because, what is a space station but a modular design? It is truly the booster packs of stations. But yeah, you just have people pull up. You can reconfigure the station as it's floating. You are like a team. The players are like people who are plotting themselves to strategize what they do, how they approach these situations. And if it's a game with a GM, they can control the antagonist, or it's just a GM-less game that just has a constant feeding of just issues and problems and weird shit happening to the station.
I'm in. So mechanically, mm-hmm. I see like using the ship generator from Mothership and just like mm-hmm. having D6 arranged as the ship structure or the, you know, the station structure.
It's my favorite table in RPGs is the Mothership spaceship generation thing, or the space station. Yeah, and then you just make it like more expansive with shapes and weirdness and chill.
And then you just have these visitor AI systems, like it, not AI in the theme of the game, but like an alien acts differently. An alien wrecks through two adjacent rooms, right? Yeah. Looking for food or whatever. But a scallywag looks in one room and then like scours it for items or treasure or whatever.
Yeah. Or like a rogue robots will try and hack into it. So you need special like hacking protection or.
So you get these antagonist programming that you do in design setup, right? Like you design the oncomers, and then play is engaging with an AI in a way, or like I think programming is a really interesting thing in tabletop games that I don't see a lot of in role playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that obviously makes sense because I would say programming is maybe the opposite of role playing, insofar as the role cannot be played because it is predetermined, whether that even is by players or design. But yeah. I think that's really interesting because then also like the pretense that we are in some way like minds of the space station in the buy-in for this game, it makes sense that we could expect particular behavior,
right? So yeah, you know that the aliens have two abilities that they always do because they always approach like this, the Zergons or whatever, the Zyrtex, and the Zyrtex like always bash through doors and they always like slime any obstacles in their way, but each one has a different like third powerful ability that you don't know until they do it or until you do some amount of research. So like
or you have a D6 table of like
exactly
anomalous actions or whatever, so you can plan a pretty picnic but you can't predict the weather in space. Yeah.
In space, that's a good title. And so you as a computer, like as a group of minds inside of a machine are creating a shared knowledge and codex of like the universe through this thing. Like, this is a microcosm of your sci-fi universe that you're doing this kind of tertiary world building while you're just defending a station against shit.
Yeah, that makes it interesting too, because maybe then you're like, wow, I've never seen this type of creature before. Let's throw some rooms at it and see how it acts before we try to stop it. We might have a couple rooms we can spare. And then also, by the virtue of, like, to circle back to using dice to structure the geography of the vessel, you could only move certain pieces, right? Like, you can't just take the middle piece out, because then it detaches all these other pieces of the ship station. So you can only move like these tertiary dice around, and maybe that includes their function. So for those of you who haven't seen it, the mothership station generator,
I think basically it's a dead planet,
rolling a heap of D6 and arranging them in like a binary way, like orthogonal, not they're touching, their flat sides are touching. So yeah, the value of the die says what kind of room it is, and then you have a general shape built by the adjacency of dice. So then, yeah, picturing that you could only move exterior rooms, but then you could move them anywhere. So you're kind of building almost like a space treadmill, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could always take the back rooms that have already been, maybe if they're destroyed, you like do something different with the dice. Because I think this game does have a sort of condition that if you don't do a good enough job, the space station is destroyed.
Right. Or you get turned off or something like that.
Yeah. But I like the idea of just perpetually, like, you move the conditions of the station around. Maybe it's repurposing a room. Maybe it's moving pieces that have been expended to new places. All the while, this AI is, this programmed antagonist is operating according to programming and whatever random qualities it might have designed into it. So you can... Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's every game, right? Like, you can only do the things that you have access to accommodate. Right. And that is just what game design is building the tools that you have access to.
Yeah.
But that's a fun... It's an interesting hybrid, because I think, too, a lot of the time we end up with, like, role-playing games that have a strategy aspect to them.
Yeah, and this is the opposite. Like, this is a strategy game that we are theming so hard you are role-playing by playing the game.
Right, yeah. You can't
like help. Imagine there's, like, four... Like, it's a four-player game, and there are four roles that the computer needs to do at once, and because you're all doing shit, you are just acting like a quantum computer. So, like, one of the players has to monitor each room, or just, like, be the camera, basically. So, like, you are physically seeing where the intruders are going. And so another one is defenses. Another one is, like, life support. Another one is layout or engineering or something like that.
I like maybe, like, a communications one. Like,
yeah.
You can't speak necessarily, but you can relay, like, you use alarms and sirens, or you can manipulate the lights and, like...
Yeah, and it's, like,
mess with the programming.
Each raid, you switch roles, so you just rotate through and you're doing it. Before I forget, I wanted to say, like, you can subsume new people. Like, so say the Scallywags go and the Dread Pirate Davis gets on the station, and you're like, damn, I want to get this person to be a part of this great family I like to call my computer brain. And so you have to, like... Pokemon style, legendary Pokemon style, get this person down to 1 HP and asleep and confused, and then just get them all the way to the throne room, and then you upload their brain, and then you just have the Scallywag Davis protocol, which means that you get harpoons or something like that.
it could be a new character skit class, air quotes, like,
exactly, yeah, well,
a new function to the computer program.
For some reason, I feel like I want to be holding a hand of cards to play this game. Like, that I want to put down a card to do a thing on my turn. And so, like, when you get a new person, you just like get a note card and then write down like, when you get a scallywag, these are the 5 cards that you add to your deck that each player gets. And those are like, there'll be a mechanical thing that's also role-playing. So you describe interesting shit happening while doing a mechanical effect in one of these rooms.
Yeah, tag Tony on this one. This is the 5 on the RPG to yeah. 2 strategy game of 1 to 10 scale. This is a
torque 5. Yeah. cool. Damn. We have 10 minutes now. What do we do?
Let's see. We did this space one. We did the story of the corpses one. We did the villain hierarchy. I mean, I feel like 3 is the sweet spot. If yeah, we do another one, it won't be good.
Yeah. We also did the Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the worst one.
But it's the best one. I want to play that one the most.
It's the best example. Like, yeah. here's a thing in media that everyone is enough familiar with. And it is a reverse funnel. You have one character and you end the game with like 6 characters.
Yeah, damn.
But it would not be very fun to role play because if you're the player who's all the characters, then you're talking a lot.
A lot of speaking.
If it's a group thing, then you have 4 players who are just sitting there waiting for you to find them.
Please find me. I mean, that's something that, like, you have to petition to the lead player to, like, yeah, you actually have to come over to Scarecrow Town and get me right now.
Scarecrow is the other one that I couldn't remember.
Scarecrow, obviously, was killed by Batman after trying to put neurotoxin in the city.
Yeah, bad. Not killed, subdued. Makes a cameo in the third one.
There has to be, like, a dark Wizard of Oz, right? Like,
oh, I'm sure.
That reinterprets that, like, okay, Scarecrow is a villain. Is Scarecrow from Batman? Like, the Tin Man is an automaton drone killing machine.
Ben Linus from Lost is the Wiz, and he's just trying really hard to just, like, keep Oz operational.
And very on edge. Oh, the Flying
Lost,
Monkeys are Lost exactly
is the dark
same.
Wizard of Oz.
Wait, hold on.
Because the Man in Black is the true wizard, but Ben Linus is the man behind the curtain.
I see. And the Jack is Dorothy. Yeah.
No. You know what? Locke is Dorothy.
Yes.
Locke wants to find the Wiz and like know the reality, right?
Yeah. Along. I think Sawyer is the lion.
Boone is Toto. I hate to say it, but Boone is Toto.
Oh, we hate to say it, everybody, but it's been a long time coming. Boone, you're on blast. You're the dog. Tin Man has to be Courage. Saeed, yes.
Oh, Courage is the lion. Tin Man needs a heart, yeah. And that's Saeed's story arc of, like, I'm trying to repent because I feel guilt for my past actions. I think
obviously,
that's the Tin Man.
Like, Russo is Gilda the Good Witch.
Yep, great.
Yeah,
has some insight into the workings of this place,
and lives here and is not complicit in the actions here.
Yeah, yeah.
The bunker is probably
the Yellow Brick Road, kind of like.
Yes, yeah, that does.
Here's the path from your kind of unknowingness to
finding the Dharma Project and the larger island is absolutely the Yellow Brick Road. Why is this fitting so well? Did you know if you watch Lost and listen to
Charles
Pink
Widmore
Floyd's?
Is the Wicked Witch and all of the freighter cast are the Flying Monkeys?
God, that's good. The Smoke Monster is
the Wizard, I think.
Yeah, is the wizard.
The true wizard. There's some dissonance there, because I think in Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain is pretending to be the wizard. And they do even say, like, John Locke tells Ben Linus, like, you're the man behind the curtain. Like, that is a thing that happens on the show, because...
Wow, I just got chills.
That is a crisis of faith in the reality of the island. But in Lost, there is both a man behind the curtain and an actual Wizard of Oz.
Right. Damn.
It wouldn't be the Brain Trust without a Lost tangent.
Without an extended Lost tangent. Who is Kate?
See, there's two. The one dissonance here is there's too many losties. Yeah.
Well, then, okay, let's categorize losties into one of the four travelers.
Kate needs a heart, too, so she's a Tin Man.
Tin Man. Hurley is definitely Lion. Sawyer is Lion.
I would say Jack's a Lion.
Jack's a Lion.
Jack needs courage because he's broken after his like, falling out with his father.
What's the singer of Drive Shaft's name?
I don't know.
Pippin? Mary? What the fuck is his name?
The singer? You mean like Charlie's brother?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I meant Charlie. Yeah, he's the guitar player. No, he's the bass player.
Charlie plays bass.
Yeah. I think Charlie is...
He needs a brain. Man.
Oh, yeah, he's Scarecrow.
That's the Scarecrow, right?
Yes. Desmond...
Ooh, Desmond is...
Desmond is the Yellow Brick Road. Like...
Okay.
Yeah. who else we got?
The others. I think
that's Flying Monkey status.
Is Oompa Loompas from Willy Wonka?
No, you're thinking of the Munchkins.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's them.
Unfortunately, they are the Munchkins. Wicked Witch. Give me some Wicked Witches.
Charles Widmore.
That... Yeah.
Charles sure. Widmore. You want to say the Man in Black, like, as a villainous
character. Oh, but... Locke's boss from work.
The guy in the box manufacturing
factory. Yeah. Who's like, walkabout. And then, yeah, Locke's like, don't tell me what I can't do.
Jack's father is another Wicked Witch.
Yeah, Walt is Dorothy.
But Michael's a Toto, and that one's a really dissonant relationship.
What's the dog's name?
Vincent.
Okay, and Vincent is a Lion.
Vincent is the good witch.
Vincent is a good witch. Michael... It's the wildest shit.
There's a lot of Totos.
Penny is a Toto.
Yeah.
Oh, what about Daniel Faraday? That's a definitely courage.
Is there a character in Wizard of Oz who makes a face turn from evil to good? Like a flying monkey who's just like, actually, my boss sucks. I want to be with you guys.
Yeah, wait, isn't... We could just say, doesn't like... There's a Wicked Witch of the West that's not doing anything. That's just kicking it in the West. In L.A., just trying to get that's my acting Widmore. Career going.
That's a Widmore, and that's a... what's Faraday's mom's name?
I don't know that. And I'm looking at the cast list.
She's also romantically involved with a young Charles Widmore.
Yeah. Jacob is a man behind... Or is the wizard. Wizard yeah. status.
What's Richard Alpert?
Who is Richard Alpert?
Oh, he's like the spiritual advisor of the island.
Oh, I think that's wizard.
The thick eyelashes.
Yeah, I think that's like wizard territory.
He's definitely like the wizard's right hand.
Yeah.
I don't think the only real dissonance I'm having is not knowing enough about Wizard of Oz. I clearly have the lost stuff under control.
That's good because we have 639 characters that appeared in Lost. Sun is Dorothy. Definitely.
What's the deepest cut one that you can sink just a nothing but net shot?
Let me. Like, I'm looking at the cast. Should I just try and use my brain?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm staring at a wall. So,
well, you've watched more recently than me. So let me try and what's the the polar bear? I think the polar bear is the tornado.
Ooh. Well, I would say the tornado is probably the plane crash.
Yeah, tornado's plane crash, but it's also the other plane crash and the other plane crash.
And the electromagnetic like
disturbances
impulse or whatever.
Yeah. There's like a part where they find a second island, right? They're like, shit, there's another one.
Yeah, they kind of bury it and like there's a point where they're being held captive and they're like, you're not gonna get away. And they're like, why not? And they're like, you're not on the same island. And it's like, oh, there's multiple islands, I guess. It's an archipelago. This in Hawaii, so.
Yeah, I know there's a big one. Yeah, that's like in Wizard of Oz when Dorothy and the crew and the posse are walking down the Yellow Brick Road, and then they spy a different road that is red,
going in a different direction.
Yeah, just like kind of parallel to the other road, and they're like,
"Oh shit,
damn.
Are we on the right road?"
Yeah, and then they stop, and she's like, "Okay, I'm trying to remember what who tells her to get on the Yellow Brick Road." Lewis Carroll tells her. Hey, that's a bad dude, Lewis Carroll.
We did it. We made it past an hour.
Yeah, by talking about Lost. Well, thanks for listening to the Brain Trust podcast. This has been a really good episode, IMO. And really, time will tell on that one. But thanks for listening. We are kind of just kicking it over there at the Brain Trust Discord. Hop by. Yeah, you got stuff to plug?
No game comes out this week.
It's no available. Game is really good.
It's available at worldchamp.io/store. It's a weird little zine of paintings and prose about making games. That kind of it has games in it, but not really. Some might say lyric games. There's one that's like a real game. I mean, I think they're all whatever. Every time I talk or think about it, I'm like, I don't know what this is, but
that's
I think
great.
It's pretty good.
Sonny, you've made something good. And where can people find you online?
I'm worldchamp.io. All my links are also there.
Nice. I'm Will Yopes. You can find me at will.com. You can find me on twitter.com, slaying the gamers. I'm getting a running riot. Why not check out the collected works of Spencer Campbell over there at Gila RPGs on itch.io. Killer shit. I think you can buy print copies of Dust and Slayer, and I think Score as well, in his store. It's really great. Check it out. Is there anything else? I'm working on Torque now that I've moved in. I'm going to just restart development on that because I moved. Right after finishing the Kickstarter. Great shit to really put a project on ice for a little bit while the money transfers and you recover from Kickstarter, because damn.
Yeah, I wonder how much that 2-week gap is deliberate to be like, just catch your breath.
Catch your breath. If I can get a Venmo transaction into my bank, like pre-cogging the original payment, like... they could do it pretty quickly. I don't know. Anyway, brain emoji and Jake emoji.